Good morning. It is time to get up with this terrific twosome. Philly welcomes Harden with plenty of brotherly love. Is this now the best team in the NBA? Meanwhile, they're talking as time's ticking. You'll hear from Green Bay's coach as the era of Aaron hangs in the balance. And then Tampa Tom in a golf podcast simply will not say the one thing everyone is waiting to hear. We've got all that and a whole lot more on this Thursday as we get up with you starting right now. Greeny, all by myself, but by no means alone. Look at the squad that we have ready to go today. Oh, we've got Indy covered from every possible angle. RC, Mike T, Graziano's ready. Sacho's got plenty to say. We have all the football stories covered in just a moment. But it begins with the welcome. The homecoming of the night, James Harden, dressed for success, Sixers Knicks. Harden's introduction in Philly sounded like this. They're excited to have him, and to say it like it is, when he wants to play, he's unbelievably good. Look at him in early in the first quarter doing what he does. Mr. Inside, he's also Mr. Outside. 19 in the first half for the Beard in his Philly debut. Third quarter, though, Sixers down 7, but they're getting to work. Harden and Bead. Ah, they work together so well. Just their third game, but the chemistry is good. Sixers within 4. Then later in the quarter, Harden and Bead. He's Mr. Outside. 27 for Joel. The Sixers are coming back, and then they would leave the Knicks in their dust. Harden plus the foul and the flex. Sixers up 13. To the fourth we go. It's a 10-point game. Don't forget Tyrese Maxey. This team has a big three, and he's the third component. He would score 25, and then it's Harden. This is Matisse Thybulle for the layup. 26 points, 9 boards, 9 assists for the Beard. So far, so good. Sixers win by 15.
It was a movie. Everything that I expected it to be. I think everybody in the world know how great these fans are, how passionate they are about these Sixers. It felt great to be out here, man. I try to get the jitters out early. But, I mean, it was fun out here. I'm just happy to come with the win.
Listen, I mean, it's only been 3 games, and they haven't played a really good team yet, but they are lighting it up since they got Harden. They average 127 points per game. They're the first pair of teammates in NBA history to each score 25 or more in their first 3 games together. We'll have much more on this as our morning continues. But to the NFL, where everyone is still waiting on that man, Aaron Rodgers, waiting to make a decision about his future. Yesterday, his coach, Matt LaFleur, addressing the wait at the combine. Here's what he had to say.
You always want to be respectful because I know it's a lot to take on. He's got a lot to think about, and certainly I'm making sure that I consistently communicate with him, but also want to be respectful of his time and the process that he has to go through.
All right. The process in Philly didn't take as long as this feels like it's taking at this point with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. Graziano, I'll come to you. What if anything, as you arrive there in Indy and start talking to people, what, if anything, are you picking up?
Honestly, Greeny, it sounds like there's a little more optimism that he will stay in Green Bay, that maybe the destination of his dreams may not be out there for him. So that's what a lot of the speculation is. And I think the Packers have a little bit of optimism, although it's based mostly on hope. He hasn't told them anything yet definitively. They continue to be about their work in terms of trying to get under the cap and working on the Davante Adams situation. Can they get a deal done before they have to franchise him? But I think there would be a lot of people here that would be surprised at this point if he left. And I think that's a change from where we were, say, a month ago.
Now, the first signpost you just mentioned, that's March 8th, which is the deadline for the franchise tag. That plays heavily into Davante Adams, so that's 5 days away. Ryan Clark, as you sit there and you consider this situation or continue to consider the situation, the idea that it's taking as long as it feels like it's taking, what do you make of it, RC?
Well, I don't necessarily know if it's taking as long as it feels like it's taking. I mean, Aaron Rodgers is making a decision on his career, making a decision on his legacy, whether that be in Green Bay, somewhere else, or retirement. And I think Matt LaFleur said all he really could say is, we have to wait on Aaron Rodgers. They certainly aren't going to call Aaron Rodgers and say, you know what, we are tired of waiting on you, we are releasing you. So Aaron Rodgers really holds all the cards at this point. And in holding all the cards, you get to make your decision when you want to. I believe Aaron Rodgers is leaning towards going back to Green Bay. All signs are kind of pointing to that. But Aaron Rodgers is allowed to make his decision when he wants to. What happens is we're so concerned with everything that's going on with him. We're so focused on it because he's one of the best to ever do it. He's someone that's done it in one of the greatest football cities in the world. We're excited and we are rushing him. But I believe Aaron Rodgers is taking his time and trying to figure out exactly what he wants to do and exactly how he wants to do it. And unfortunately for the Green Bay Packers, he has that right. It's tough to sit around and think that we may lose one of the best to ever do it. But I think if they're confident, you can kind of hear that in Matt LaFleur saying, we're going to wait. We understand what's going on. But I think in the end, this is going to be much to do about nothing, very much like it was last offseason when we talked about this for 7 months.
If he stays, and that's fair. And, you know, Mike T, you got a lot of attention yesterday for suggesting that the time this is taking is selfish. Let's just acknowledge that that's on the table. But this has been going on since last April. We know that he has been considering this for a very long time, at least that long and maybe longer. Are there still variables out there? When I keep hearing people say, well, he's taking his time to make his decision. Are there still things, or have there been things up until very recently that come into this? Are the decisions that the Packers are making, the moves they're making now, do they play in any meaningful way to what he will ultimately do? Because otherwise, it seems to me, this is a decision he probably made a lot longer ago than this week.
Yeah, I agree with that. I agree with that, Greedy, from this standpoint. When you think about Tom Clements, the quarterback coach, sure, that may help a little bit, but RC nailed it. He is holding all the cards. Those cards are making him selfish. He is taking money out of his teammates' pocket, potentially, in Billy Turner, Preston Smith, Randall Cobb. And here's what I mean by that. If he decides not to come back, they're probably going to release all those players. By doing so, they'd rather get to the market on March 2nd or March 3rd than March 16th, Greeny, because there's more money in the market today than there will be all season long. So to your point, what does he possibly need to know on the 4th or 5th that he didn't know last October, November, December? So by him waiting, and to use RC's term of holding all the cards, he could be hurting his teammates. And what's disappointing is he's trying to come across as being above the fray and elegant. Well, if you're going to be that way, help your teammates out, help your organization out, let them know what your plans are.
You just said it better than I set it up, which is to say, what is it he's waiting to find out between now and the 8th that he didn't already know yesterday, the day before, a week ago, and maybe longer ago than that? And how about the perception of time, Sacho, as we sit here, the way we look at time and the way players in a position like him might look at time?
Well, I would just welcome everyone watching to NFL free agency. This is what it feels like to be a free agent. Days feel like weeks, and weeks feel like months. 1 week feels like an entire month. There's a proverb that says, hope deferred makes the heart sick. It's a lot of Packers fans that hearts are sick right now. And so for me, I've been a free agent before. RC, he's been a free agent before. This period, March, decisions aren't made quickly, and all of a sudden it feels like it's taking forever. It is not taking forever. Aaron Rodgers still has a couple weeks, at least 6 days or so till the 8th, another 10, 12 days or so until the 16th, before he hurts anyone, including his teammates. So we all need to pump the brakes, take a breath, chill out. He's going to make his decision soon.
All right, so we have a well-rounded consideration of opinions when it comes to the Rodgers of it all. We'll see where it goes. How about the other legendary quarterback that we just can't seem to say goodbye to? It's been just over a month since Tom Brady announced his retirement, but just days after that announcement, you heard it, he told Jim Gray on the podcast, quote, you never say never to a possible return. Now he goes on the Fred Couples show on SiriusXM yesterday and says this.
I wish I had a clear vision of what the future holds. But I think for me, there's a lot of great things ahead and a lot of great opportunities. I know I said right after football season, I was looking forward to spending time with my family. And I've done that the last 5 weeks. And I know there'll be a lot more of that too. So looking forward to that, looking forward to some golf in the next few days and some more family time. And then we'll figure out where we go from there.
Okay, so look, there are a lot of different ways. RC, I'm trying to read your face there in Indianapolis. What is going through your mind when you hear that?
Tom ain't retired, man. Tom is not. You know what? when he first retired, I was like, this is a man who wouldn't say he's retiring if he didn't want to retire. This is a man who has seemed to be very sure about everything in his life. I think Tom don't want to retire. Now, you know what? You know what happens? You get home and your wife is saying, hey, look, I make $88 million a year. We are set. You've made all this money playing football. You don't need to work anymore. We need you home. We want you to not have to eat avocado ice cream. We like cookies and creams. We like the cookie dough. We like the Ben and Jerry's. And so they want those things. And they're like, you know what? Giselle's like, hey, Tom, I need you to be here. The kids are like, hey, Pop, let's go play baseball. Let's go throw the ball and pitch it around in the front yard. And he was like, you know what, guys? You're right. Things didn't end well this season. I don't really like the locker room. The temperature there isn't quite right for me. I'm done. And now he's sat around a little bit. He's looked at a little bit of the film from the year, and he said, you know what? I was damn good. I can still really do this. And everybody's asking, Tom, are you truly retired? Hey, guys, if you don't want to do something, we say we don't want to do it. You know, there's some times in the production meetings that Julian is saying, hey, RC, we're going to talk about this. And I'm like, the hell we are, Julian. I am done. If Tom Brady didn't want the door open, if Tom Brady didn't want to play, he would tell us. This makes me feel that not only is the window or door open in Tampa Bay for him to come back, that Tom just might actually walk through it.
Yeah, I am completely in agreement, because the one thing he didn't say is, and hasn't said, is what part of I'm retired are people struggling with? Like, yes. It would be very easy for him to close this down. And Mike T, while the Buccaneers are talking about, well, he can't go play somewhere else, that's bad business and all the rest of that, the truth is, and you live through this yourself, if Brady wants to come back, there will be a moment in time where he can force the Buccaneers to let him do what he wants, right?
Absolutely. And they're hoping he comes back. They're not expecting him to come back. So at that time, they're going to do everything they can. And listening to RC, they may open up a Ben & Jerry's franchise and do whatever it takes to get Tom Brady to come back. But they will cajole. They will beg. But one thing they will not do, and you could carve this in slate, they will not trade him to another team. If you want to play football, Tom, it's right here in Tampa, Florida. So those romantic notions about San Francisco absolutely are off the table. When I was the GM of the Jets, we had a similar situation with Brett Favre. But as you know, Greeny, we had just hired Rex Ryan. We wanted to draft a young quarterback, which we did in Mark Sanchez. That situation was different. There's no way it makes sense for Tampa Bay to release or trade Tom Brady.
Wait.
Even if they would draft a quarterback, draft somebody for the future. So there's hope down there. I don't think they're expecting it. But now RC has given us a pathway to get Tom back to one buck place.
But how about a world, Dan Graziano, where they acquire a big name veteran? Like, I've seen suggestions that maybe that could be a place Deshaun Watson winds up. You would know better than I, Dan, if that's a serious consideration. But in a world in which they go out and address the quarterback position in a big way, they believe that Brady is done and they do that, and then he tells them he wants to come back, now they have to figure out some way to make that work. What is your perspective on all this, Danny?
Yeah, if we're living in a world where we think Brady's thinking about wanting to come back, then that would probably be part of his plan, right? Wait till they replace me, and then they can't afford to keep me on the roster with whoever their new quarterback is, and they would have to give me my wish and trade me. So that could be part of the calculation. And again, we're speculating on what's in his mind, but he is inviting us to by, as you say, not, you know, making it as clear as others have when they've reached this point and retired. So. There would be a situation, theoretically, if they were to trade for Deshaun Watson. Again, we're in hypotheticals. And now Deshaun's on the books for $35 million, and Tom says, well, I want to come back. Well, the Buccaneers can't carry both of them. At that point, their hand would be forced. They could put him on reserve retired list, or they could trade him, or they could release him, and that would be the decision they would have to make at that time.
And that's how Brett Favre wound up a Minnesota Viking. That's exactly what happened. Sacho, give me the crystal ball. I got 30 seconds. What does the crystal ball look? Is Brady going to come back?
Well, crystal ball, if that situation that Graziano just mentioned happens, I'm trading the other guy and I'm keeping Tom Brady. I don't care who it is. We got
a second-time
MVP. I don't care who it is. Tom Brady, I'm ruining
business.
Your plan. I'm trading the other guy. I'm keeping Tom. I'm winning another one or two rings, 100% without a doubt. Sin duda, as they say in Espanol.
Okay, I love it. I got to go to a break, but I can see we got disagreement working early this morning, and I'm looking forward to reporting it. We have so much still to do. As we continue, while Russell Wilson and Aaron Rodgers' future with their current teams is a big question, we will give the other quarterback NFL teams should really be looking at. Plus, we knew Patrick Mahomes was good. But wait till you hear the sweet praise his coach has heaped upon his QB now. You're going to enjoy it, especially for breakfast. Let's get up on ESPN.
Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more. Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Get Up is brought to you by Miller Lite. Taste you can depend on. And the combine is underway. Busy little time in the NFL. Dan Graziano, what is the very latest around the sport, beginning with the quarterback, Deshaun Watson?
Yeah, look, there's some hope, at least from Deshaun Watson's end, that the legal situation could get cleared up here in the next couple of weeks. And if that happens, there's expected to be strong interest in him from several teams. This is still a young player who's played at a high level very recently. But, I mean, there are teams out there, three teams in the NFC South looking for quarterbacks that could be in the Watson market, right? The Saints, the Panthers, the Bucks, all in need of a high-end option at quarterback. So is the Washington football team. The Washington Commanders, they're in the quarterback market as well. And I do think they will look at and possibly acquire one of the veteran options. But they are very focused on the draft and the quarterbacks in the draft, because Washington knows it needs a quarterback for this year. But they're very, very focused on the fact that they need a quarterback for the future. So don't be surprised if Washington is a team that uses a first-round pick on one of these quarterbacks. Now, of course, the 49ers did that last year, and they're going to be moving on from Jimmy Garoppolo. But the news Adam Schefter had a couple of days ago about Garoppolo having shoulder surgery coming up on his right shoulder has complicated the timetable. Once Jimmy Garoppolo has that surgery, he won't be able to throw for 4 months. So you're looking at late June, early July. It may take some time for the 49ers to get a Garoppolo deal done if teams want to know more about his health and how available he's going to be this season.
It's an interesting piece of all of this here. And the general manager, John Lynch, was there yesterday talking about this, the question of where he will be after the surgery and whether or not he gets traded. Here's what Lynch had to say yesterday.
Jimmy's a part of us right now. A lot of people need or want quarterbacks right now, and he's obviously a guy they'd look at. So, yes, we have listened, but he's a part of us, and he's going to work diligently to get back from this surgery.
You know, it's been suggested on the show, and RC, I'll start with you on this, that the 49ers sitting where they're sitting and having been as close to the Super Bowl as they were a year ago, that it wouldn't make sense to trade away Garoppolo, that they've got the quarterback in waiting, but you've got two is better than one, and see what ones. What do you think? Does it make sense to you, RC, for them to trade away Jimmy G?
I mean, it makes sense if you get something that you feel is surplus for Jimmy Garoppolo. You don't just go out and search for a second round pick if you want to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo, if you want to move on to Trey Lance. But if someone offers you something that you never thought you'd get, if you can get a first and a third rounder in this draft or the next draft, I think you do unload Jimmy G. But also, we have to think about what people feel in the building. Jimmy Garoppolo has gotten you to a Super Bowl. Jimmy Garoppolo got you to the NFC Championship last year. He's a good player. And if you're Kyle Shanahan, if you're John Lynch, if you're the San Francisco 49ers fans, you know what it looks like when Jimmy Garoppolo plays and when he doesn't. And so for me, there is no rush to get rid of Jimmy Garoppolo. It is a Jimmy Garoppolo is a part of us. And in saying that he's a part of us and saying that there is no rush to get him out of your building, you also don't have to take deals that are bullcrap. You don't have to take deals that aren't enough. People can't just look at you and say, you know what? We know you don't want him. We know you got to move on to Trey Lance. Take this piece of paper and this paperclip and send us Jimmy G. John Lynch is doing exactly what he should be doing, saying for right now, we are a two-quarterback team. And if you want to change that, you have to come hard or don't come at all. Pause.
And so, Mike T, let me come to you on this, because the idea that they might get more than you would think for Jimmy G is possible based upon the very simple laws of supply and demand in the quarterbacks this offseason.
Yeah, the honest, sober view out here in Indianapolis is right now, when you look around the landscape of the league, there's probably at least a dozen teams that need quarterbacks, and there's just not enough of them. And Greeny, we'll be sitting here maybe 3-4 weeks from now and say, I can't believe quarterback X or Mitch Trubisky got this. And if I am the 49ers, I am not trading Jimmy G under any circumstances. In the last two of the three seasons, you've been to a Super Bowl, NFC Championship game, one play away from getting back here this year. Why would you move on from him? It's a 17-game season. We saw so many teams lose quarterbacks. I am not trading Jimmy G. I'm going to run it back. Let Trey Lance come along. Maybe he beats him out. Why not operate from a position of strength and not weakness?
Why is it, Graziano, that when he was saying that the first time, or maybe I was the one saying it the first time, that you seemed skeptical, Dan?
It's just not what they're going to do. I mean, they traded all those picks to move up and take Trey Lance, and they already had Jimmy Garoppolo under contract for two more years at the time. They know what he can be. The reason Trey Lance is on the 49ers is because Kyle Shanahan sees the ability to elevate the ceiling at the quarterback position to a place Jimmy Garoppolo can't. Lance has a level of athleticism and high-end skill that reminded Kyle Shanahan of Josh Allen in Buffalo. That was the inspiration. Josh Allen crushed the 49ers late in the 2020 season. And Shanahan thought, I need one of those. So Trey Lance is that guy. They're going to move on to him. Jimmy Garoppolo is going to make $25 million this year, and I don't think the 49ers have any intention of paying their backup quarterback $25 million.
Hey, Greeny, part of being a GM is your plan has to be firmly etched in pencil. And they may have felt that way a year ago. Jimmy G played really good football. Let's not move on from a great quarterback. You got a good young one in Trey Lance, but our plan is etched in pencil. We go by what we see. Jimmy G's a really good player.
I like that. Let me leave it there for the minute. I'll come back to you, Dan. I promise.
I think it's about moving. Yeah.
Okay. I promise I'll come back to you. The delay there is obviously a little bit of a factor. In the meantime, we're going back to Philly in a moment. The Sixers' dynamic duo of Harden and Embiid are 3-0 since the big deal. Are they clearly the team to beat? We'll get that question answered in just a moment. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. We are back on Get Up, and we opened the show this morning with James Harden's debut in Philadelphia and just how good he looked, not only there, where he does look good, Jay Williams, but he also looked awfully good, and he and Joel Embiid, three games in, look incredibly comfortable together.
I said this before, I think this has the best chance to be the best pick and roll the NBA has seen since John Stockton and Karl Malone.
Yeah, and that kind of effective, and they do it from every single possible place. The Knicks made this a game early, but that wouldn't last particularly long. Look at Harden flipping the ball all over the place. He would finish with 26 points, 9 rebounds, 9 assists, and Embiid had another big night. It's just three games, but the Sixers look awfully good. Scoring is up for the team, nearly 20 points a game, 3-point shooting. Harden himself is the first Sixer to score 80 points in his first three games with the franchise. So, to say the very least, so far so good. And Jay Will's not the only one who joins us. My uncle Seth Greenberg, no relation, jumps in here as well. Seth, the question's a pretty simple one. Embiid and Harden together, do they make the Sixers the best team in the NBA's Eastern Conference?
Yes, they do. I mean, you talk about it. You talk about what Harden's been able to do. It's not just what he's been able to do for Embiid. It's what he's been able to do for Tyrese Maxey. What has he been able to do, going to be able to do for Tobias Harris, Matisse Thybulle. He changed the dynamic of everything. He's a shot creator. He's a scorer. He sees all five defenders coming off every single ball screen. He gets everyone easy baskets. He's the toughest guard in the NBA at his size, at his strength. And to me, he makes the Sixers the best team in the East, not even close. Hey, Jay Will, I know you love your Brooklyn Nets. I understand that. But you know what? It's not even close.
So here's what I will say, Seth. There's a tendency for me to agree with you, but let's just hold on for a second. They played against a team that won one game. One game in the month of February, mm-hmm. the New York Knicks and the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are fighting for a seventh or eighth seed in the Western Conference. So I'm all about giving Joel Embiid and James Harden all their credit. I love them as a dynamic duo. We can talk about how Doc Rivers needs to activate Tobias Harris more, because that's going to be a question to watch. Tyrese Maxey is terrific. But let me actually see them when they compete against the gauntlet. Now they have the Cavs coming up, the Miami Heat, the Chicago Bulls. Let me see when they compete against the upper tier of the Eastern Conference.
I mean, there's time to be. Yes, they've played the Knicks twice, to your point. And yes. The Knicks, so they stink. But let me, Seth, let me come to you then, because you brought up Brooklyn. And that obviously, those two will be looking at each other no matter how this thing turns out, because they were the parts of the big trade. What is your perspective? KD is supposed to come back tonight. When they had him on the floor, they were first in the East. Since he left, they have been one of the worst teams in basketball. But when they get KD back, and whatever it is they get out of Kyrie, how does Ben Simmons fit into that group? How good is Brooklyn going to be by the time the playoffs begin?
KD is the best player in the world. But I'll tell you one thing. He's playing with two ifs. And what I mean by two ifs, you've got Kyrie Irving. If he's going to play, how many games is he going to play? Is he going to be in shape? Is he going to be able to fit with Ben Simmons, because he's going to have no court time with him? And then the other if is Ben Simmons. Look, Ben Simmons, at five, I like him at five, actually, because he can rebound the ball on the defensive end and initiate your break. Obviously, he's not expected to make a lot happen in terms of making shots, but he is going to shrink the court. And last time I checked, and Jay Will, you won a championship. You were tough. Magic's won championships. Bird's won championships. LeBron's won championships. Those guys had a toughness, a pedigree of winning, a fierceness about him. When I think about Ben Simmons, I think fragile. Like, because if he wasn't fragile, he wouldn't have ran from the challenges that happened in Philadelphia. He would have said, you know what, I'm going to get this thing right. I'm going to stick around. We have the makings of a championship team. But he didn't. And he didn't because he didn't have that grit, that toughness. Can he defend? Yeah. At a five, is he a good player? Yes. But when you got two ifs, and one of those ifs is a little bit fragile in terms of self-doubt, forget about it.
You know, Seth, I'm worried about the Brooklyn Nets, because, Greeny, you may mention when they were first in Eastern Conference, they had James Harden on that team, mm-hmm. who gave them a prolific punch offensively. Now, when Ben Simmons comes back, that's a big question for this team. And as we all know, when we get into the playoffs, defensive strategies become more crystallized and refined. So my biggest question is, I love Patty Mills. I love Seth Curry. I love Kevin Durant. He is the best player in basketball. I like the size that they've been able to add. But there are teams out there like Miami, who's great defensively. There are teams out there like the 76ers, the Milwaukee Bucks, defending world champions, that they understand how to play defense in these games. I don't know who Ben Simmons will be offensively, and I think that loss of a punch offensively hurts them.
Very quickly, a week from tonight, the Nets are at Philadelphia, which is a game a lot of people circled. It's Simmons going back. Now the question is, will he play? He hasn't played yet. Will he play in that game? Does he need to play in that game?
He better play in that game. You much rather start going against Philadelphia right now mm-hmm. than potentially see them in the playoffs for the first time, and that's the first time you're actually going to compete against Philly. You'd rather start the process now than
later. I agree. I mean, get it over. We don't know that they'll play the Sixers in the playoffs. Who knows what might wind up happening, but it certainly could. Seth, do you think he needs to play that game a week from tonight?
Without a doubt, he needs to play. He needs to face his demons.
Yes.
He's got to face his demons. Like, here's the deal. You got to go back to Philly and man up and say, you know what? This is what you're missing. I'm ready to move forward. I'm ready to help Brooklyn win a championship. Because if he doesn't, he's running from his demons.
All right, let me go to the other game last night that I wanted to show you here. An unbelievable finish between two of the East Conference big teams, and that's Jimmy Butler's Heat and Giannis and the Bucks. A fourth quarter, a buck and a half to play. Heat are up by two. Tyler is the hero. Knocks this one down. He had 30 off the bench. Heat by four. But look how this game finishes. Less than 20 seconds to go. Bucks down four. They get a steal. Chris Middleton, in transition. It's a one-point game. Heat call timeout. Now watch what happens. 13 and a half seconds left. Heat inbounding. The ball goes to Butler. They're going to wind up calling this a jump ball, Jay. Is this a good call?
No, that's a foul.
That's a foul.
It's not a jump ball.
Clearly should have been a foul, but they call it a jump ball. Eric Spoelstra can't believe it. Giannis winds up winning the jump ball, and so here we go. Watch the clock at the bottom of your screen. 6 seconds, 5 seconds, 4 seconds, 3 seconds. Jrue Holiday, Bucks at 1-point lead. Hold on. They're not going to call a timeout. They're going to just, this is the what they wind up with. 1.9 seconds left, and that's the shot they get, Jay. And that's the best they can do, and that's how your ball game ends.
120-119. Milwaukee with a big win. They were down 14 entering the final 6 minutes. They went on a 21-6 run to end it. Entering the game, teams were 2-488 when trailing by 14 points in the final 6 minutes of regulation. Milwaukee now just 3 games back of Miami for the best record in the East. All right, I want to change the subject here because while I have you two guys, we have to focus on this. Saturday night, 6 Eastern on ESPN, the legend, Duke coach Mike Krzyzewski, will take the court for his final game at Cameron Indoor Stadium, Duke and Carolina. If you went to Cameron over the years, odds were you saw Coach K win. He won 88% of his games there. Prior to Coach K, Duke had 8 different head coaches who coached in that building. They combined to win 214 fewer games than Mike Krzyzewski. And, you know, we have the two of you guys. Seth, you coached against him in a lot of those games. And, Jay, you won so many of those games with him and for him. So the emotions, you think, as you prepare to watch this and all of us to experience this legendary moment on Saturday?
It's surreal for me. I mean, I haven't – we obviously been doing so much. I haven't really focused on how it's going to be like for me to be in that arena. I won 95 of those games at Coach K. My record was 95 and 13 in my 3 years, right? Mm-hmm. 3 ACC championships, 1 national championship, number 1 seed every single year. And he kind of – having Grant Hill, having J.J. Redick be there, I don't know if Kyrie Irving's going to be there, Zion Williamson, all of us come back. That brotherhood is going to be a very emotional moment because it's so much bigger than basketball for him. That's how people will remember his legacy, but the way he's affected all of our lives as players is something that can never be taken away and will be with us for the rest of our lives.
Now, J.J. Redick, I saw the other day, said he's excited. Many of us are approaching this with an element of sadness. He said he's excited for Coach K because Coach K is going to love whatever the next step is, that moving beyond this and having whatever additional freedom in his life. Do you think he's going to love it? Do you think he will embrace whatever the next challenge in his life is?
I think he's going to say that, but I think it's very similar to Tom Brady. Every time I hear Tom Brady talk, like you always wonder, are you sure, Tom?
Yeah.
And I feel like there's really no hobbies that Coach K has. He doesn't like to play golf. He loves to spend time with his grandkids and his family and Mickey. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there's a lot of things he can
do.
USA
there.
Basketball.
I mean, he's got that entire, that whole, his family is all around him. They're all right there.
Seth knows this. He's still going to be around the program
yeah.
a ton.
Seth,
it's in his DNA.
You coached against him. I mean, if you wanted to make an argument, he's the greatest basketball coach in American history. You could easily defend that argument. How would you describe your many years coaching against him?
Well, Coach K, he set the standard. He set the standard and he had the agility to change with times, but I can tell you one thing. The 9 years I was coaching the ACC, the first day of practice to the end of the season, every single day in practice, everything we did was with the mindset of trying to compete against Duke because they set the standard of how hard you had to play, how tough you had to be, how competitive you would be. The things we emphasized every single day had everything to do with trying to compete and have a chance to beat Duke because they set the standard. But the thing to me that Jay, Will, you mentioned, I think Coach K, when he walks through that tunnel, you're going to see the banners and the championships and all that stuff. I think the thing that's going to move him the most is when he turns around behind that bench and he's going to see 70, 80 players. Because in the end, you know, the most important thing as a coach is helping build a bridge for your players to cross. And he's going to see 70, 80 young people whose impact he had on their lives and seeing them with either their families, as their husbands, as fathers, as successful people in life and say, you know what? Knowing him, he's going to say, you know, I did pretty good because – that's really what I got into coaching. You don't get into coaching to hang banners. You don't get coaching to win national championships. Guys that get into coaching do one thing, because they had someone coach them in their life that impacted them, and they wanted to do the same for someone else. So I think that's the thing that's going to move him as he's walking through that tunnel, through those doors that one last time. When he sees those former players, if it doesn't, it's got to move him. Because I tell you, it's going to move all of us. When I talk about that, and I talk about a bunch to my former players, that's the thing that moves me the most, and I think that's what will move him.
Yeah, it will be a special moment. He, of course, legendary, played for Bob Knight. I do have to get in one other thing. Do you happen to recall your first game coaching against him, Seth?
Yeah, I surely do. I made it for about 38
get
minutes and
here.
19 seconds. I got tossed with about 38 minutes. That was a special moment for me because you know what? because it set up the second time I coached against him, Greeny, when we won in Castle Coliseum against J.J. Redick's team. But, yeah, I was asking the official what he was going to have for dinner that night, and we could meet later on and I'd pick up the tab. But, look, coaching Cameron was fun. That was a statement game for me to let my players know that I'm standing beside him. Didn't get a great whistle that night. Lost by about 100 points. But the next game we did win. So it was a good
thing. Nor would you ever get a great whistle inside Cameron, Seth.
He got thrown out of his first game against Coach K, the bat. Jay, get back on the radio. Thank you, my man. Uncle Seth, thank you very much, as always. Hey, we're going to have John Shire on the show tomorrow. John Shire seated there, as you see, next to Coach K, who will succeed him as the head coach next year. John Shire live here on this program. Get up tomorrow, right around this time. Here on ESPN. Meanwhile, good Big Ten college basketball matchup for you tonight on ESPN and the app. We've got Michigan State and Ohio State in Columbus. Coverage will start 7 o'clock Eastern, so we look forward to that. Coming up here, if the Eagles aren't sold on Jalen Hurts, that means they have to land a big-time quarterback. How can they do it? Who should they target? We've got those answers coming up. You're watching Get Up on ESPN. It is time now for our wish list NFC East edition, starting with the Cowboys. Ryan Clark, what do the Cowboys need this offseason?
The Cowboys need another impact secondary player, whether it's a corner to play opposite Trevon Diggs or if it's a safety who can make plays in the middle of the field. Jayron Kearse did an excellent job last year. I think you try to sign him, but if you can get a free safety that can go sideline to sideline and make impact plays on the back end, now you have big-time players on all three levels of the defense. And you continue to move forward in that improvement after the first year under Dan Quinn.
New York Giants are next. Graziano, what do they need this offseason?
Oh, only the same thing they've needed for the last 10 off-seasons, and that is offensive line help. The Giants have not been able to keep Daniel Jones upright and healthy. They have not, by their own admission, by John Mara's own admission, but he said, we've done everything to screw this kid up. They need to invest in that line. Pieces up front. They could use both of their early first-round picks on offensive linemen, and I don't think anyone in the fan base would be at all upset about it, and neither would Daniel Jones.
They pick at 5 and 7. Mike T., how about the Eagles? What do they need?
Two things, a quarterback and a receiver. While Jalen Hurts led the NFL with 784 yards rushing for quarterbacks, he was only 26 in completion percentage. I don't think he has the ceiling to ultimately take them to where they want to go. And in the last couple drafts, they missed on Ortega Whiteside. They missed on Jalen Reagor. They need a big-time receiver opposite Devontae Smith.
Yeah, they have drafted receivers. They just haven't worked out. There were quite a few in the first round this year. You see, they have the draft capital. Those are the three picks they have in the first round. Meanwhile, back to the quarterback. Eagles coach Nick Sirianni was talking yesterday and said he likes his chances with Jalen Hurts behind center. Listen to the coach.
He's tough. He's competitive. He's got high football IQ. Jalen Hurts has all those things, and he's going to only continue to get better. And you could see the progression of him getting better throughout the year. You know, he led us to the playoffs, and obviously we want to go further than that. And we're really confident that Jalen's a guy that can help us do that.
It's such an interesting position for them to be in, particularly in a year where it does not feel like there's a quarterback in the draft that is ready to come in and play immediately. So, RC, should the Eagles be aggressively trying to use all that draft capital and everything else to go out and get another quarterback, or are you feeling good with what you got?
Yeah, you know, it's like, like you want to be sure. You want to look at Jalen Hurts. And here is my thought process on that. If you look at Jalen Hurts in year two and you think that Jalen Hurts can eventually become Dak Prescott, that Jalen Hurts can become a quarterback who is not only above average, but a very good quarterback, a quarterback that can make the plays that you need from him and also add some versatility because he can use his legs. I think you keep Jalen Hurts. I think you use those three picks and find some way to build around him. Now, if you're sitting in that building and you don't believe that you believe that his ceiling is lower than that, then if his ceiling is lower than a Dak Prescott, he's not a championship level quarterback. And if that is truly what the building feels, if that is truly what you've seen from the practice, from watching the film of seeing him play last year, and if what haunts you is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers second half when you had to throw the football and you looked like you were the little Giants, not even the Daniel Jones led Giants, the little Giants, then you say, you know what? I have to go make a play for a guy like Russell Wilson. But it's about the evaluation. It's about what you see in the day-to-day. If you believe that Jalen Hurts can progress, to me, you don't spend those picks.
Right, then, Sacho, I'm making you the building. RC is saying the building
Tannenbaum.
Gets to
Tannenbaum. Tannenbaum, who is right next to me, is shaking his head no. Tannenbaum says I'm wrong.
I'm well aware. You don't believe he ultimately can be Dak Prescott, right, Mike?
Let's take the gray out. No, he can't. Give your three first-round picks to Seattle. Go get Russell Wilson and go compete for championships. You can't overpay greatness. You have foundational players in Philadelphia. Go get Russell Wilson. At his age, you'll get 5 years out of him, and he's better than Dak Prescott.
Well, okay, so if they're that close, if you believe they're that close, Sacho, let me come to you, because RC just said the building has to decide what they think the future ceiling is for Jalen Hurts. You're the building now, Sacho. What is the ceiling? How good can Jalen Hurts become?
I have so many questions, Greeny. What am I made of? Is it stucco? Is it bricks? Like, is it straw? Am I falling down Three Little Pigs? What kind of building am I? No, if I'm the building, I'm believing in Jalen Hurts because I love what he brings to the table. I understand that we were a running team when we went on our run to make the playoffs. I understand that we were down 31-0 in the playoffs and couldn't throw the ball. But I also understand that Jalen Hurts has a high football IQ, number one. And number two, it seems like he has the stuff of champions. He talked about the day after the game, I'm going back to work. He could be the next, we talked about it, whether it's Dak Prescott, Russell Wilson, some of these young quarterbacks who maybe don't do great early on and then they get better and better and better. So if I'm Philly, I'm using my draft picks to build my roster. Maybe I'm getting a big time receiver in free agency. Maybe I'm going and building my defense as well so that I can become a championship team. And then if Jalen Hurts is the guy this year, great. If he's not, I can find someone else next year.
Yeah, there is the whole element, because he's so inexpensive at this point, of allowing this decision to play itself out over at least one more season. Graziano, what are you hearing as you are on the ground there in Indianapolis with everybody?
Look, I mean, there's two Philadelphia-related things in this show that I don't believe. I don't believe there's any chance Ben Simmons is going to play in that game next week. And I also don't believe that the Philadelphia Eagles are ever going to put all of their eggs in one basket at the quarterback position. I mean, the reason Jalen Hurts is on their team is because even though they had just signed Carson Wentz, their former first-round pick, to a long-term deal, they felt like they had to make sure they had coverage at the position. That's how they operate. So if they're all in on Jalen Hurts, I do believe there'll be another option there in case it goes wrong. And I also believe that if the upgrade were significant, right, if they found out that Russell Wilson was available and interested in playing for them, they would make a play for that. If they found out Deshaun Watson was available and interested in playing for them, I think they'd take a shot at it. But that's kind of the list. I don't think they're going to go off of Jalen Hurts right now to go to Jimmy Garoppolo or Jameis Winston or Mitch Trubisky. I think that the better way is to build around him and see if it works, because he has shown enough to merit that.
RC, put a quick ribbon on it.
No, that's absolutely, I agree with Dan 100%, which is very rare for the two of us. Like, he is absolutely right. If that upgrade is significant and you have a feeling that one of those players wants to play with the Philadelphia Eagles, I think you have to fill it out. You have to make an offer there. But there is not a ton of players that will be available at the quarterback position that you're taking over Jalen Hurts right now with the current state of this team and also having three first-round picks. And that's the position that the Philadelphia Eagles are. And when I feel that way, I think that Jalen Hurts will be taking snaps for this team in week one.
Yeah, it's worth once again pointing out that the quarterback class this year does not stand out in the way that it has in some recent seasons, and I think that factors into this a big way as well. As we roll on here, I want to remind you about the hockey. We got the hockey game coming your way tonight. Our ESPN Hockey Night matchup, the Bruins continuing a West Coast trip against the Golden Knights in Las Vegas. Coverage will begin at 9 Eastern. That's tonight on ESPN. Coming up, Aaron Rodgers, tick, 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 hasn't made a decision. Tom Brady maybe questioning his recent decisions. We'll explain where we are with both legends as we roll on. It's Get Up on ESPN.